Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rake van Niekerk, and in this podcast series, I speak to leading professional investors, and we talk about their investment journeys. We look at their very first investments they've ever made, and then how their strategies have changed over the years. We also take a peek into their personal portfolios to see whether they practice what they preach. And the idea is to identify a few golden nuggets of wisdom to help amateur retail investors to become better investors. My guest today is Eric Nell. He is the founder and chief investment officer of the boutique asset manager Terebrinth Capital. Eric, thank you so much for your time today. Let's start off with your background. Where did you grow up, and did you dream about becoming a professional investor when you were still at school?
Yeah, good morning, Rake, and thanks for the opportunity. Also, thanks to the listeners for tuning in. My background really is one that's not going to be glamorous. I know that you've done many of these before. Many of my peers that you interview manage portfolios when they were in primary school or for their parents, and have been investors for much longer than I have. I would classify myself as someone that probably prefers speaking about my professional career, but just brief background, I would be what you would determine or classify as someone that grew up on the wrong sides of the rail track. I grew up in a boarding school. My life really revolved around sport, and I was not exposed to the markets whatsoever. I had to find my own way after school. And I got exposed at a very young age after school to a very wealthy family as part of a warehouse job that I did. And the individual directly that I worked for got involved or was actually active on the stock exchange. And back, I don't know if you know the 80s and the early 90s, but in those days, you actually could trade stocks and have 7 business days to actually settle those trades. And I followed a few of his trades while sitting in the warehouse, and this really fascinated me. I then tried my own hand at it, and I think my first trade was an M-cell, and I think it traded from, I can't remember, 1 rand to 3 rand or something, and I was really fascinated. After that, I gave a lot of money back when I went to London and tried to trade for myself, and from there, I think I really, you know, paused and thought, this is something that I want to do, but I need to find a structure.
Yeah, those days were interesting. The trade plus 7 days. I think it was a big announcement by the JSE in the early 2000s, if I remember correctly, that trades have settled virtually immediately, and that removed a lot of leeway within the trading environment. But let's return to your last remark. You said you needed some structure. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so, you know, just completing the thought that you created there is, you know, obviously that was the initial introduction to what I would classify really as gearing. So you could take a position in something without actually potentially having capital at the start, and then you would have time to figure out how you're going to settle for it. Now, obviously, the way that I did it when I was 17 or 18 years old, that would be classified as absolute gambling, because I didn't have any idea on what would be an appropriate risk size for these trades. I had no idea of volatility. I have to reiterate that I have, at that stage, zero background of financial markets, the stock exchange, trading, risk-taking, any of these things. Risk-taking to me really revolved around bunking school and jumping off cliffs, you know, during class time. So I've got the same group of friends for the last 30 or 40 years, and they will tell you that I've got a PhD in the School of Hard Knocks, and PhD stands for Panhard Distinctions.
I just want to quickly explain what you meant there. So you would be able to buy a share without having the money, and then within 7 days you can, or you must sell it. If the price increased, you would make a profit, and if it decreased, you would have made a loss and paid in.
Absolutely.
You can also do it the other way around. Sell shares you don't have, or could short it in that way.
We tried a few times, and then I think it was with PSG at that stage. So Wimbolli and Morf de Blanche and those guys who worked there, we're obviously very close friends with the person that I worked for with his father, who was a very well-known person in the Boerland motor industry. So I think we probably got away with more than, well, at least I got away with more than I probably should have been at that stage.
Yeah, so you would sell shares you don't have, and within 7 days you had to buy it. So again, you know, if the price dropped, you would make money, and if it rose, it would, you know, cost you a lot of money, a very, very aggressive and a risky approach. But did that stick? Did you continue to, you know, walk the tightrope?
No. So what happened was I got found out very early in doing that, to the extent that my risk sizing was completely inappropriate. And then again, the person that I worked for, who did not do this for a living, but he obviously seemed much more schooled than I did, said that this was not my day job and I'm completely out of my depth and I must stick to the things that I was meant to be doing, which was selling shoes and leather jackets. I left soon after to go and try and find my way in London, and I was there for 4 years. And as I made money in London, obviously much easier to earn money as a South African working in London in those early days where you got paid pounds per hour, I then used that money to start trading a stock account back into South Africa. And then I started working through trading books. And I'd say that for the first 20 years of my career, subsequently, I've based a lot of what I've done and built on the back of standing on the shoulders of giants, which is just reading every single trading book that I'd say have ever been published. I have read them, you know, religiously, probably some of these books 5-10 times over. And I mean, you can never say to someone, this is the exact way of doing it, but I would say a great schooling would be definitely get an education. So don't follow my road, but the education also that you can get from trading books is absolutely immense.
Can you mention a few books which has made a difference in your strategic approach?
Oh, for sure. So I would say for my personal growth, all the Steve Drobny books, Inside the House of Money, you know, all his books have been guiding lights in my entire career, and also, you know, building a successful business, which is obviously an ongoing process. And then all the Stock Market Wizard books as well, so the Jack D. Schwager books. There are many more. Obviously, the George Soros books are books that I think that anyone that's serious about doing this for a living, you have to understand the logic about some of the things that he says. You know, I remember two great quotes from George Soros in the old days, the one about imperfect understanding of the human condition. I think that is an iconic quote by George Soros, because it teaches you that you must understand that you can be wrong, and admitting that you're human and you're flawed and you can make mistakes. I'd say that that is probably one of the most important things when you start, which is, I think if you consider the early journey that I've also explained to you, know that I followed. And then also, you know, my favorite quote from George Soros in the old days was the one about what we do for a living is stuff. You know, if it was easy, me to make would be doing it. So yeah, there's many books, but I'd say Steve Drobny and Jack D. Schwager, that's a great start if you read all those books. And I would say as your career develops, read them again, because every few years, as you develop, you learn new lessons from those books.
I think that's phenomenal advice. But returning to your investment journey, you know, it seems like initially, especially when you were in London, it was more of a hobby. But at some stage, you would have, you know, realized, listen, I'm pretty good at this. Maybe I should do it for a living.
This is actually very ironic. So if I retrace, I mean, I've never really discussed any of this with anyone else but my wife, but if I retrace my steps on how I got here, it's really obviously something inside me when I was little or when I was born, I hate making mistakes. So I would spend a day trying to fix a cry nest in a reel after someone would have shouted at me for stuffing it up. And I think it was the same thing with the markets as well. So my hobby in London, as you refer to it, which is an accurate description, it didn't go well because you were far removed. You know, you had a day job, so you weren't really invested and investing enough time and effort. And again, you didn't have structure. And so when I got back to South Africa after 4 years in London, I wanted to make a career out of it. And I started trading for myself in a personal trading account, and I dedicated full time to that. And after 3 or 4 months of doing that, and these were the days of dial-in internet, and I traded warrants as well, you know, those DB warrants, way too volatile and being far removed away from the news. And I started eating into capital, and I realized I need to get in financial markets. And I really wanted at that stage, I really already, after having read these books, wanted to become a macro fund manager. And so I put a CV together, and I will never forget that Claire Boquin, responded to me saying, with this CV, you'll never get a job in financial markets. But I got an opportunity to do temporary filing job at Coronation Capital, which to me was one of the original hedge funds in South Africa. And during those first few days of doing a 1 month job in the space of 2 or 3 days by, you know, just working through the night, trying to impress them, they just gave me more and more stuff to do. And quickly after a few months, I was in their Dublin office where I came across David Barnes, who was the owner of Coronation. And I don't know if he necessarily took a liking to me, but I think that he had the capacity to spot someone that's really hungry and eager. And I think he opened a lot of doors for me without me really realizing it. So when I got back to South Africa and worked with Coronation Capital in Joburg, they assisted me in doing what was back then, I would say, an investment banking course that included, you know, starting to study for CFA and all these things. And that's really where the structure then, I think, then started.
Yeah, that's an interesting journey. And throughout this period, did your investment strategy change the way, you know, you approached your personal portfolio?
I would say that for the first 4 or 5 years of my journey after school, you know, referring to an investment portfolio would have been, even the first 7 or 8 years, you know, would probably not be the correct phrase. It was really haphazard, scattered, no structure to it. As I joined Coronation Capital and started working in the financial services, and you get exposed to different traders and different mentalities and approaches, you know, then you really start, you know, looking around you and you see the James McPhersons and the Alan Senders. These are absolute legends in my mind in the South African financial markets. And a lot of people don't even know their names, but I would say they're right up there, you know, with the George Soros's and Stan Druckenmiller's. These are absolute legends in South African markets. And just being exposed to those guys and seeing the different styles that they followed, I think really gave an opportunity to then, you know, slowly but steadily put much more structure together in terms of my approach. But I would say at that stage, I realized that this was something that I want to do for a living. And it was not so much anymore about my personal portfolio, as you referred to, but it led eventually to launching Terebinth Capital, which is my personal portfolio is Terebinth Capital, really.
Yeah, that must have been a big step to start your own investment business, because that's in a totally different level than managing portfolios. So take us through the thinking there.
Yeah, so I think just very briefly, obviously the 4 or 5 years at Coronation Capital was a great platform to launch from. I was then approached by Nedbank to launch their fixed income international distribution business. From there, I was approached by RMB because I really enjoyed macro writing. And so I published a daily document that was sent out relatively broadly across South Africa. And from there, Arno Lorenz, that used to be at Coronation and Oak Mutual, approached me to join him at Atlantic. And I was there for 5 years. And it was during my time there that I realized that the only way to do things the way that you think it should be done is to do it yourself. That's not being disrespectful to any of all those giants whose shoulders I've been able to step on or stand on. It's not in disrespect to any of those journeys. It's just, you know, starting your own journey and doing it the way that you believe it should be done, which really, I would say, at the core of that revolves what one believes your investment philosophy and approach to looking after hard-earned capital by savers should be all about.
Absolutely. Managing people's pension money is a very, very, you know, significant responsibility to have, because you 100%. Will have a massive impact on the quality of their retirement. If you could go back in time to yourself when you were, you know, very young, you're starting to invest, or as we've said earlier, you know, rather gamble because the way you've approached it. What advice would you give yourself?
Look, I suppose every person's journey is different. And I think your upbringing obviously matters a lot in answering that question. So no bird cries if it gets kicked out of the nest and it finds its own way eventually up into the sky. So whatever your journey is, that's not really what should be holding you back. But I think once you decide and set your mind to something, I would say going back, even if I felt sorry for myself at that stage and didn't have money, I would definitely encourage every single person on earth to invest as much as possible time in getting a proper education. So I'm a huge fan of the sciences, you know, business sciences. I think accounting is a great field. I think engineering is a fantastic field. And I think CFA still remains for me an absolutely premier field to consider when you are in this line of business. So I would say first and foremost is actually invest in your education. You know, when you're 18 years old and you think that you can play professional sport and you really cannot, you need a backup plan. I didn't even think about it back then. So yeah.
Very, very, very sound advice. Just lastly, and this is the question most people wait for in this podcast, what has been your worst investment you have ever made? The one where you go back and say, why did I take that decision to invest in that particular product or equity?
Yeah, look, I think outside of the lack of education answer, because it's really a bogeyman that sits over you for a good 10, 20 years. It's really only well into launching Terabint that people didn't really ask me anymore, why don't I have any qualifications? You know, to single out a single investment is probably not that easy. Also, you know, I'm old now, so there's been many, many mistakes. And also, you know, you don't really need to get much more than half of your calls right. What's much more important is to make sure that you don't ride to losers. So you've got to admit that there's no education in the second kicker for mule. But if there's one thing that does stand out, it would probably be specialized outsourcing. And I'm probably, you know, I don't mind giving away my age, but this is a very, very long time ago. But yeah, Dave King took all my pounds that I made in UK.
Yeah, I can remember they folded in the late 1990s.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
during right. the .com, when that bubble burst, a lot of those companies, I think Brainware was also one of the favorite stocks at that stage. Also,
there's a long list of companies that pretended to be IT companies in South Africa back then. Yeah,
absolutely. And the best one, the one you are the most proud of?
I mean, without sounding corny, obviously marrying and getting three kids, and that's a great investment. Look, I think it's important, you know, to mention to those that listen, we've tried to, and we continue to try to build something very unique at Terabint. And so by far, my investment that I'm most proud of, financially speaking, is starting Terabint, because even if it's just in our own small way, we really want to show to South Africa how we think it should be done to make sure that we all feel welcome in this country and that we all deserve to be here and we can work together. So I think there's a lot of merit in people just pausing and stop listening to very negative comments from politicians and people trying to drag us apart. You know, we have more in common than we don't. So I'd say by far the thing that I'm most proud of, financially speaking, is launching Terabint and really investing heavily into what we believe in.
Eric, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your insights. It's most definitely a very, very unusual story. But it shows you how you can change your own destiny by taking decisions and then working towards it. I think the message regarding reading everything you can about investments and educating yourself to a high level, that is sound advice. And in your case, definitely it shows you that it is successful.
Thanks so much for the time, Rick. I appreciate it. And thank you to the listeners also.
That was Eric Nell. He's the founder and the chief investment officer of the boutique asset manager, Terabint Capital.
Show me the money.
That was The Money Web, the A Better Investor podcast with Rake Finikap. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the Money Web podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. Money Web, your trusted source for business and investment insights.